Chapter 17. Behind Mirrors. Kirkwall after nightfall was the ghost of a city. Dark shapes of crooked houses casting overlapping blocks of shadow across the narrow streets. Once the distant noise of celebration in Hightown faded behind Fenris, it was deathly silent. No prowlers accosted him, no prostitutes called out to him. Lowtown was emptied. Somewhere an alley cat screamed. Fenris ran, head down, teeth gritted, along the path of churned-up cobblestones that was Merrill's Trail. She had cut straight through some of the most unpleasant slum districts, taking the fastest route to the alienage. He was unhappily aware that he had no weapon. He had not thought to carry one during the celebrations. The autumn wind picked up, blowing chill into his face as he ran, along with the smells that did not belong to this night and this city. Salt wildness of the open sea, something old and green like the forested foothills of Sundermount, and the sharp ozone scent of magic. Fenris tried to ignore it. He ran. He arrived at the top of the alienage steps just in time to see Merrill blast the wreckage of the Venendal out of the way as she half ran, half flew towards her own front door. He threw himself after her. Inside the little hovel, there was wreckage. It was not the usual chaos of Merrill's absent-minded scholarship and poor housekeeping, but true destruction. Books were scattered among tumbled furniture, and the door to the bedroom hung off its hinges. Merrill had halted just inside the door. Her apprentice, Tarly, lay collapsed in front of the fire, pale and terribly still. Merrill seemed unable to move. Fenris went to the boy mage and knelt. Frost rimmed the tips of the young elf's fingers and glittered in his eyelashes. It was melting, though, in the fire's heat. He was still breathing. Fenris glanced over his shoulder and saw, by the broken door, the icy pattern on the walls and floor that showed where the blast had been. Tarly had not fallen here. Solas had stopped and carried him to the fire after freezing him. Fenris remembered the strange perception he had had in the midst of the gate-sealing ritual, of that old, cold, terribly strong power. Solas could certainly have killed Tarly. He had chosen not to. Merrill had not made a sound, but there Fenris could feel her eyes on him. He glanced up. Her mouth was trembling. "He lives," Fenris said. "He is breathing, Merrill."
"I should have been here," Merrill said. "I'm the elder. Keeper Marathari would have been here. I should have been here."
Fenris turned his head away from the dreadful look on her face. So much horror deserved at least the dignity of privacy. But he could not help thinking that if it had been Merrill, Solas would have had to kill her. She was far too strong a mage to be disabled like this, especially once she resorted to blood magic. Pointless to consider it. He ignored the queasiness at the thought of what might have happened, finding Merrill small and still and terribly cold on her own floor when Hawk inevitably dragged him along to visit the hovel in the morning. Merrill was a blood mage and a danger to all who encountered her, and a murderess. Fenris shook the boy's shoulder and watched his eyelids flutter and tried to forget the picture his imagination had conjured.
"Oh," said Tarly when he opened his eyes. "It's you, the champions."
His eyes closed again. "Where is he?" demanded Fenris. When there was no answer, he tried to modulate his voice. Kindness did not come easily to him. "Tarly," he said.
"I tried to stop him," Tarly said faintly,
without opening his eyes. The melting frost looked like tears dripping down his face.
"He took them. The Focus, the Arulenholm. I tried to stop him." "Oh, Tarly, you didn't have to," said Merrill. "I did, Keeper. I tried."
"Where?" said Fenris. But Tarly did not answer. His breath evened out. He was exhausted from fighting a battle he could not possibly have won. They would get no more from him. Fenris stood. His fingers twitched for an absent weapon. "What now?" Merrill looked ill with fear and grief and anger.
"He's taken the orb," she said.
"What can he do with it?"
"Anything!"
She looked around wildly and her gaze caught on her unconscious apprentice. Her lips tightened with anger. Then her eyes widened and she breathed.
Oh!
All of a sudden, she was running again, straight past Fenris. He caught her arm as she passed and grasped only air. He turned after her and was just in time to see her throw herself through the alluvion in the bedroom and vanish. The ancient mirror had been broken when they returned from the Fade. It was not broken now. The alluvion shimmered like water, alive-looking, bright with magic. To Fenris's senses, it hummed. He grimaced, though there was no one there to see. Some small part of him whispered that this was no concern of his. This was a thing of magic and ancient memory. Its uncanny humming made him feel faintly sick from just being near to it. And what purpose would he serve beyond the glass? One ordinary elf, unarmed, in this conflict of witchcraft which he barely understood? He was not Hawk to throw himself wildly into madness, simply because it was there. He remembered the wash of magic pouring over him as he stepped through this thing the last time, and he knew he was afraid. In the next room, Tarly coughed. Fenris had sent Hawk to get help. He had run after Merrill himself. He had not thought twice about it. He pictured Hawk and Llewellyn finding him here, standing helpless before the alluvion, unable to go on. Who knew how long the door to elsewhere would stay open? He had faced worse, looking for Hawk. Faced it and never trembled. It had been easy. It had been for Hawk. But Fenris was a free man. He knew that. He loved Hawk, but he did not live for Hawk only. Merrill knew more of the orb and the mage who had stolen it than Fenris did. She was a blood mage and a danger to all who encountered her, and a murderess, and a friend. Whatever Solas was, whatever he intended, she would not face him alone. Fenris swore, braced himself as if he were about to dive into cold water, and ran into the mirror. He half expected the formless dreamscape of the Fade, the wide, still lake where they had found Hawk. But the mirror did not lead the same way twice. He stumbled to a halt after a few steps and stared. There was no sign of Merrill, still less of Solas. He stood alone in a courtyard filled with mirrors. 100 mirrors, 1,000, man high. Some stood apart on high plinths. Some were arranged in groups or circles, and none of them reflected anything. Their frames were varied. Some were finely carved stone after the manner of the Sundermount ruins. Others elegant golden metalwork, and others still looked like ancient, rough-hewn masonry. A few, even older-looking, seemed to have simply grown from the ground where they stood. They had the appearance of twisted trees. Great stone owls and wolves watched over the place, peeked around the edges of mirrors or perched stony-eyed above them. Magic permeated the whole courtyard, rippled over his skin like a thin film of oil. His markings glistened, lyrium singing softly under his skin, painfully familiar and yet totally strange. Not even the Fade had felt like this. No place Fenris had ever been had felt like this. He stepped forward and felt the alien air move around him as if it were alive. There was a terrible aliveness here. It felt as though something was looking out through every dark mirror, and that something, whatever it was, had noticed him. He shuddered and kept moving. There was no obvious way to go, but the shape of the courtyard was not completely open. The curved lines of the standing mirrors made a kind of avenue, and though the sky was a uniform, unearthly gray, towards the stony horizon there was a pale yellow, like a promise of dawn. After a moment, Fenris summoned the lyrium in his skin to life, and saw the blue-white light reflected there, in the glowing mirror frames. There was an odd and bittersweet satisfaction to it, even to the pain. It was the true pain that meant the markings were functioning as they should, not the numbness and agony of the blight. He had changed what they meant. He could have chosen to get rid of them, and he had not. They were his markings, not his master's. He had not been walking long when he heard a voice. "Stop!" it cried, high and thin. Merrill. He ran towards the cry past banks of dark mirrors. It had come from a high circular structure, hardly a building, only a domed roof set on delicate columns that rose in the distance. A mighty stone wolf guarded the stairway up. Fenris darted past it and its twin at the top of the steps. And there they were. Merrill and Solas faced each other across the open circle beneath the dome. The floor beneath their feet was paved with tiny fragments of gold in a great mosaic. Solas stood half-turned, interrupted in whatever he had been doing. Merrill's hands were flaring with a faint shimmer of magic. Fenris stared and did not even notice he had let his markings fade. Seven mighty mirrors stood beneath the dome in a great arc. They were old mirrors, tall and arched with frames of twisted heartwood. Before each mirror, unreflected in the dark glass, there was a statue. They were so like the statues in the tower under the Sundermount, they might have been wrought by the same hand. Seven elves in ivory and gold, each with pale opals for eyes. The work was extraordinarily fine. The ivory robes each elf wore had been carved so deftly they seemed to drape like silk. Each of the seven gods, they were gods, beyond a doubt they were gods, the same gods that Merrill so often swore by, was crowned with a jeweled circlet. The faces beneath the crowns were carefully distinguished from each other. Some ancient, unknown sculptor had known exactly what he was doing when he gave this face a half-smirk and that one a frown, made this profile a little sharper and those cheekbones slightly tilted, carved in crow's feet around the eyes of the central figure, and softened the severe mouth of the statue on the far left. Yet there was a similarity between the seven carved faces. All of them were proud. And Fenris looked at Solas, standing in the midst of the mirrors, and suddenly saw again what he had half seen on Sundermount, when Solas had taken the amulet from the statue of Mithal. He had not seemed out of place there. He was not out of place here. His face was like theirs, not just in its stillness, its paleness, its resolve, but also in... There was the line of a cheekbone, and there the shape of a long nose, and there the sharp jaw. No wonder Fenris had missed it. Beneath Sundermount, surrounded by magic and codes and frescoes like painted riddles, he had sensed some hidden thing and assumed it must be complicated. But this was simple. He thought, as he had not thought in years and tried not to think, of his encounter with Varania. How strange it was to look at someone else's face and see yourself reflected, your own familiar features looking back at you, your own blood, your family. "They are your kin," he said. His voice echoed through the open space and seemed to jolt both mages. They turned to stare at him. Merrill looked more surprised than Solas did. Solas only glanced at him.
"That is a slight oversimplification," he said.
"Lightly, a polite correction.
My clan, perhaps, would be closer to the truth."
He nodded to Merrill.
"Though we are otherwise very little like the Dalish."
"Where's Mithal?"
said Merrill. The goddess from the Sundermount was not included among the seven.
"Not here," said Solas.
"And where are you?"
Fenris challenged him. Solas tilted his head slightly, fixing Fenris with a considering look that felt like being speared. Then he said,
"Behind you."
Fenris glanced involuntarily over his shoulder. There was nothing there but the great stone wolf that guarded the stairs. He looked back at Solas, who raised one eyebrow and then smiled a tight, secret smile. He had the wicked blade of the Arulenholm tucked through the belt of his ragged robes, and his staff in one hand. He reached down into the folds of his overrobe with the other and came out holding the orb. At his touch it flared with pale light, dim over most of the surface, bright along the lines of faint carvings, forming glittering words in some ancient, unknowable alphabet that Solas no doubt knew well. Fenris could feel the magic buried in the thing, even through the ambient magic that pervaded this space. Quiet but deep, as if the orb were the opening of a well dug down to some strong, secret spring of power. The flare of light was reflected in Solas's eyes. At least, Fenris hoped that light came from the orb.
"I can't let you do it,"
Meryl said.
"You do not even understand what I intend to do," said Solas, "and I could hardly explain it to you."
"You're the Dread Wolf," Meryl said. "You destroyed our people. You betrayed the gods."
Solas grimaced, shook his head, and turned away. Green light flared between his hands, the orb growing brighter and brighter as he fed magic into it. Fenris felt the greasy air of this unearthly place growing charged with power. Green light flickered and arced between the seven mirrors and was reflected in the opal eyes of those seven still faces. Proud faces, cold faces, unpleasant faces. Fenris remembered the vision he had had in the Fade of Daenerys standing in Solas' place, speaking with his words, bowing in his festival robes. An understanding struck him with white fury in its wake. Let them call themselves what they pleased. He had spent enough time in the company of mighty mages to know better. They were not gods, these seven. They were magisters. He summoned the lyrium burn to life again. Here it seemed stronger, as if all the magic in his skin was singing. Meryl aimed a bolt of spirit magic at Solas's back. He batted it aside with a casual gesture, without looking away from the orb, without even turning around. Fenris thought of every time he had seen Solas in battle. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, he had been holding back. Still, Fenris had been a magister's bodyguard, no less than a Southern Templar. He had been made to kill mages. He had no sword, but he did not need a weapon. He was a weapon. The lyrium sang through him with bright, familiar pain. He sprang forward. Solas hurled another casual blast of power backwards. It slid sideways off the shield that was the markings, and what little remained of the spell barely touched him. Then Fenris was slamming into Solas at the shoulder and reaching through muscle and bone for the orb. A wave of magic flung him back sharply, and only the sudden blue curtain of a barrier stopped the blow being worse than simply painful. Meryl recast the shield even as Solas dispelled it. Fenris expected him to turn on her, but Solas did not seem worried by her presence. He kept his eyes on Fenris, no longer casual, staff in one hand, orb gleaming with dim green light in the other. Fenris regained his feet and kept moving, feeling without looking for the ice mines that Solas was silently casting around his feet, watching the mage watching him. Solas awkwardly shrugged the arm that Fenris had thrust his hand through. He had thrown Fenris off before there was any real damage, but now he was wary. Fenris snarled and sprang at him again. Ice and cold fire bloomed around him and were gone. Delirium brands glowed brighter, burned colder, throwing glinting reflections into the corners of Fenris's vision. And then the world seemed to slow, and Fenris could see every twitch of Solas's fingers, every arc of light that darted around his staff. Haste. Meryl's doing. Solas's mouth tightened and he gestured to dispel. It gave Fenris enough time to see the way that the golden mosaic was rupturing at his feet, stone humping itself into a boulder. He ducked beneath the stony fist, a missile hurled faster than any mere catapult could ever manage. He heard the boom and crack as it struck a pillar behind him. Then he was on Solas again, using all his weight and momentum to drag them both down together. They rolled across the golden floor. Solas's staff went skittering out of his hand. He was hanging on grimly to the orb, which still glowed fade green. He had thrown up a barrier to prevent Solas forcing his ghostly hands into his viscera, but he could not stop Fenris from punching him in the face. A crack! Solas's nose started bleeding. He bared his teeth in rage. Fenris felt the stirrings in the greasy air that were the gathering beginnings of another spell. He punched Solas in the face again. The mage's head snapped to one side, and his spell died unborn. Fenris knew how to do this. A powerful mage at range was a force of pure destruction, an unstoppable weapon, near indestructible. But a powerful mage up close was only a man not wearing enough armor. It was hard for even the strongest wizard to cast a spell when he was distracted by being wrestled to the ground and then punched repeatedly in the jaw. Solas struggled underneath him as blood dripped from his nose and mouth. He could have struggled more fiercely if he had not been clinging to the shining orb. There was some strength in his narrow body, and he knew what he was doing. Fenris could keep him down, but he could not pin him. He could feel the way Solas fought him, that he had once trained for this kind of combat. As if magecraft were not fearsome enough. He was formidable now, but some long-ago young elf had been truly terrifying. Fenris was younger, though, and stronger, and Solas was too used to relying on magic for his edge. Oh, Daenerys had been a genius, no doubt. They scuffled on the dustless ground, and the markings blazed and flared in answer to Solas's stinging, vicious spells. Spells meant to freeze and burn and paralyze, and some of which Fenris had never felt before. The markings protected him from the worst of it. But even so, if it had not been for Meryl's steady stream of strengthening spells and healing magics, the barrier after barrier she dropped over Fenris, he would have been in difficulty. Solas clearly knew it. When he broke loose from Fenris's hold for a bare instant, he used it to conjure one of his fearsome blizzards in Meryl's direction. Fenris leapt on him and wrestled him back again as icy winds began to blast between the mirrors and statues. They ended up against the base of the central statue. The proud, cold face seemed to be looking down on them as Fenris pinned Solas against the statue's base with his whole body weight and seized his wrist. He twisted as he forced Solas's arm back. The orb fell out of Solas's grasp and rolled across the golden mosaic floor. Its greenish light flickered.
No!
Solas cried. It rolled to a halt at Llewellyn's feet as she mounted the last of the steps. She stood in the shadow of the great wolf statue, Hawk on her left, Varric on her right. Solas froze. The blizzard flickered out of existence, leaving shocking quiet behind it. The quiet of this ancient, magical place where there was no wind and no sky and no living thing to break the old silence. Llewellyn stooped and picked up the orb. The mark on her hand flared briefly as she touched it. Solas stared at her, silent, blood on his face. He seemed barely aware that Fenris still had him pinned against the statue's base, his hand twisted up behind his back. Llewellyn looked at him, and at Fenris, and at Meryl, and then her cool, considering eyes took in the columns, the mosaics, the seven mirrors, the seven statues. Fenris saw her eyes dart back and forth from Solas to the mighty figure above them.
Algernon, she said.
Yes, said Solas.
Llewellyn looked at Fenris. The orb was a dim star in her hand.
Let him go.
Fenris did it, and stepped back, but not too far away. Nor did he let the lyrium fade. Varric had raised his crossbow, a bolt ready. Hawk, grim-faced, shifted to the open stance of a battle mage, staff angled. Fenris felt Meryl settle another barrier around him. Only Llewellyn did not seem to think this was a battle. She looked at Solas, and looked, and he said nothing.
The statue of Mithal we saw, Llewellyn said eventually. Was it a good likeness?
Solas swallowed.
Yes, he said.
I thought you must be older than you looked, said Llewellyn. After the Temple of Mithal, I thought so.
She looked at him some more, and at the seven gods arrayed behind him. The contrast was stark. Seven golden idols and one living elf, ragged and bloody.
And the other statue, Llewellyn said at last, when the silence seemed near unbearable. The broken one. Was that a good likeness, too?
Fenris was still close enough to Solas that he could hear the quick intake of breath before he answered.
Yes.
Did you know it would be broken?
No.
Llewellyn looked at him consideringly. You didn't think we'd find it.
No.
But you knew we might.
Solas was still, and then he nodded once.
And what if we had found it? Llewellyn said softly. That true likeness of Fenharel, unbroken, in that place. What would you have done?
There was quiet, and then Solas said,
I suppose I would have had no choice but to explain everything and beg your forgiveness.
Silence followed the admission. Llewellyn's mouth twisted. So was it a game to you, soulless? A bet you made with yourself? To see what would happen?
No, said Solas.
Not that. Never that. Were you afraid we would find it?
Llewellyn demanded.
Solas said nothing. Were you hoping?
Nothing.
Fenris's eyes caught on Varric, who was clearly having a hard time containing himself. Bianca was aimed and ready, but behind it he was pulling extraordinary faces, mouthing questions. But Hawk was still grim and steady. In moments like this one, Hawk could be relied on.
Why did you join the Inquisition?
Llewellyn said. Hawk closed his eyes.
You who love the truth, Fenris remembered.
For the orb, he said.
How did you know Corypheus had the orb anyway? Said Varric. Where would a darkspawn magister even get something like that?
I gave it to him, Solas said, opening his eyes to meet Llewellyn's gaze again.
She did not react. Hawk's brows were drawing together thunderously, and Varric was openly boggled. And somewhere over to Fenris's right, Meryl let out a gasp. But Llewellyn only watched him. Solas flinched under that cool, merciless gaze.
It was a mistake, he said.
No kidding, said Varric.
I never meant for this to happen.
Well, I'm glad to know that giving the Darkspawn Magister an artifact that let him tear a hole in the sky and unleash a horde of demons on the world was an accident, said Hawk. That makes me feel much better.
Solas did not even seem to hear him. He was focused on Llewellyn.
I never meant for this to happen, he said again.
And this time he gestured as he spoke, a sweep of the hand that might have meant the silent ruins around them. Or else might have been Solas gesturing at Fenris and Meryl and Llewellyn herself.
It was my mistake. Please, Inquisitor, let me put it right.
He stepped forward and held out his hands, both of them. A wordless plea. Llewellyn looked down at the orb she held and said,
You want to bring them back?
Solas inclined his head.
What would it change?
Everything. Said Solas.
For the elven, everything.
Llewellyn looked at the orb, thoughtful, considering. Fenris heard Solas breathe out and felt the hair rising on the back of his neck, even before she looked up, smiling a little, and said,
All right, what's one more world-shaking decision?